When we want to find out how we're related to a cousin or an aunt, we look to the map of our familial history on a family tree. But the traditional family tree has grown much more complicated in recent years as the structures of families change. The New York Times reports with increases in surrogates, sperm donors, and same-sex couples, some families now organize two family trees, one genetic and one emotional, and some schools are now skipping the traditional classroom project altogether. How have you dealt with those issues in your family or your classroom? Tell us your story. 800-989-8255 is our number, and our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Joining us now via Skype from her home in Bedford, New Hampshire, is Melindy Byrne. She's president of the American Society of Genealogists and the director of Boston University's Genealogical Research Certificate Program. Sorry for the stumbling. Nice to have you with us, Melindy.
A pleasure to be with you, Brian.
Now, there are cases like the one in the New York Times piece. A child's biological mother can also be his or her aunt because of surrogacy. So, in the 21st century, how do families differentiate between mother and aunt, or even cousin or brother?
It really isn't a leave it to beaver world anymore, if it ever was. I think you have a wide selection of choices in how you embrace family members or exclude them. And there are very different ways of doing that across the country, across the spectrum of relationship. My feeling is that anything that defines a family as a supporting foundation for children is okay.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really matter how they got there. The fact is that there are children there, and they need to be parented, and they need to know love, and the details can be worked out.
Absolutely. You can have step parents, foster parents. They can be addressed as mom or grandmother, and the child may never even know that this is grandmother by virtue of grandfather's fifth marriage, and that there's no biological connection whatsoever. The emotional one takes precedence.
Mm-hmm. And can you explain a little bit about that, how different family trees differ, the emotional family tree, if you will, versus the genetic family tree?
Well, when genealogists study identity and kinship, the methods that they use have a lot to do with their purpose. So when you're considering something like a missing heir, you'll use certain tools and certain standards, and a lot of them are legal, to follow to define family in that way. If you're looking for birth parents for an adopted child who's had their records closed and has always wanted to know, especially a growing number of people in their 60s and 70s who've decided, I've always wondered, even though I think this person is probably deceased, I'd just like to know, and I'd like to know if there are any extended family. You come into ethical questions about whether this is going to be good for the individual searching or for the people found. And the news is full of wonderful cases where this worked very well and people are thrilled. And at the same time, there are cases where it was not a good idea.
Well, let's hear from one of our callers now, Rika in Grand Rapids, Michigan. How has your thanks for calling us on Talk of the Nation. How has your family dealt with this issue?
Well, I was kidding when I called in. I said that I usually tell people just grab a pen and paper and follow along as I describe, because my biological parents, my mother and father, never got married. But I know I have two half-brothers and a half-sister. My mother married my stepdad about 25 years ago, and I inherited a stepbrother and two stepsisters. When I was 13, my parents together then adopted what would actually be my step-nephew. So I actually have an 18-year-old little brother. So really, I have no full-blood siblings, but I have quite an extended family tree, I tell everyone.
Mm-hmm. And do you all get together on holidays, or those of you that can or that live nearby?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because most of the siblings are quite a bit older than me, and so they, you know, they have their own families and they've moved away. I'm 32, and my youngest step, I think she's like 45 to 48, and so she has her own family. And I think just because when my parents got married, I was kind of like so young that we were never really close.
Mm.
And now my little brother being 18, he's off in his own world, and I'm raising my own daughter, and I'm divorced, so we have a split family, and it's everybody's going every which way.
And did you ever watch Leave It to Beaver? I mean, did America kind of get caught up in a false notion of what is family, do you think?
I absolutely think so. Being, like I said, I'm divorced, and I think that we are the new normal. My ex-husband has been remarried for 7 years now. He has a stepdaughter and a daughter. So my daughter has two siblings now, and we just make it work, you know. And I think that's the new normal now. That's the new Leave It to Beaver family. If the divorced parents can get along and put the kids first, I really think that's the goal now.
All right, Rika, thanks very much for calling us today.
Thank you.
Melindy, do you think that's right? I mean, that this is the new normal, that there is no, you know, more sort of the classic sitcom nuclear family just is a thing of the past if it ever existed to begin with?
I'd have to take the last position, if it ever existed to begin with. If you think back to what Rika was saying about how she had steps that were much older than she, and she had an 18-year-old relative. That's not unusual. If you go back 100 years or 150 years, genealogists study the unusual patterns of adoption in that time frame where it wasn't a formal thing and people, for the good of children, took care of them in ways that we would never have considered in the 1950s normal or in the 1970s normal, and certainly not now to be normal. And yet the structure that you're left with is exactly what's happening now. You also had people with great stretches of childbearing. You'd have 20 years where you'd have 10 or more children, and so the oldest ones would help take care of the youngest ones.
Right.
It's not unusual in the course of even just the American experience to see these kinds of very blended piecemeal families, if you will.
Let me just take a call from Evan in Tucson, Arizona. Evan, what are your thoughts about this?
Well, I just wanted to ask the caller or ask the guest to maybe talk a little bit about use of genograms, if she knows what they are. I work as a child and family therapist for a nonprofit here in Tucson, and one of the assessment tools that we use pretty extensively with families is the genogram, which is basically a structural diagram of the family where you work in the same information that's going to be there from a family tree, but then you also start to work in emotional relationships. Where is their conflict? Where is their closeness? You look at things like substance abuse, domestic violence. You also look at strengths of the family, and it's an amazing tool for, I think, anyone to really see themselves within the systemic context of their larger family.
Melindy, something that you've used?
I've not used it for my clients. I've seen others use it, and it is very valuable both for the positive side of studying what individuals consider family, and for the negatives. I tend to hesitate a little bit over patterns that people see in things like disease or alcohol or drug abuse. I don't think they're necessarily as significant as popular opinion and some research would now suggest, but certainly, it's a great tool.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Evan, for calling us. Melindy, I'm just wondering if are schools still using the family tree projects, or are they have they been kind of have educators been discouraged from using them because perhaps they can leave children upset or confused?
From what I can tell, experience has discouraged some instructors, teachers, fourth grade teachers, eighth grade teachers. About that time in the U.S. public school system, there's usually a unit about your family history. And if you ask a fourth grader to explain everything to do with their family, it can be a very confusing and sometimes self-shattering experience when it doesn't measure up to what everybody else in the class has, or if the teacher, by some indirect way, never intentionally, but communicates the idea that the family should be a certain structure, and you should have 1.4 siblings, and your parents should be a certain age, and things like that.
Lindy, I just want to interrupt you to tell our listeners that they're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Melindy Byrne is on the line with us from Boston, where she is the director of Boston University's Genealogical Research Certificate Program. I interrupted your answer. If you want to go ahead and continue, I apologize.
Well, I think that was probably the gist of it.
Okay. I'm just wondering, is family trees play a role in not just school projects? They're medical. They have legal implications and medical implications about who inherits property when a biological relative dies. Is that in a sense, still being worked out? Is the case law, as it were, still being determined on that?
There's some pretty interesting developments in case law having to do with missing heirs and the standards of proof as to who individuals are. You've even got cases like the Clark Rockefeller case out there, where the gentleman that he's suspected of murdering was adopted, and the police having a body and suspecting that the body belonged to an individual had perfect DNA, but the way police databases and labs work, they see only matches. They don't have techniques for looking for people who aren't already in the system or mm-hmm. who aren't already a suspect. And that's where genealogists can help.
And what about the changes resulting now from surrogate motherhood to using the use of sperm donors? How has that changing or impacting the genealogical business, as it were?
Well, it makes it interesting. There's certainly more clients out there who would like to know more than what they've been given, and some people take courses like the one at BU to learn how to do that for themselves. There's some fabulous mysteries out there that people, when they have the time, would love to solve, and that is what they go about doing. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to. I wanted to read from an email that we received from Alan Wombeck in Atlanta. He writes, "It was 15 years ago when I was in a committed same-sex partnership in a large Florida city, and my partner's two biological children lived with us almost full time. Our fourth-grade son was assigned an art project in which he was to show members of his family, and he included me. Naturally enough, we called and gave his teacher a heads up, and she was fine with it." But then the local newspaper picked it up and did a front page story on us in the family section, and the teacher became less and less okay with it as the media coverage spurred other parents to ask about it. Nowadays, the world has changed so much that a fourth grader's family tree project surely wouldn't raise eyebrows the same way, I hope. Although it did ruffle a few feathers, we were both proud of our son for volunteering to set the example he did. And I'm just wondering, coming off of that, Melindy, if you think that maybe children are more prepared better prepared to, more open to deal with these kinds of questions than perhaps us older folks are.
Well, I think a fourth grader is as strong as a fourth grader can be, and it's past time that we accepted what is real and didn't embrace an ideal that isn't out there. those children that are asked to give presentations in class in eighth grade are at another crossroads where perhaps they're examining their own identities right then and there, wondering, you know, who am I? Shall I define myself by who my relatives are, who my parents, who my family members might be? This is really significant. And yes, it can come out very well. It can be a strengthening exercise, or it can be a disaster.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Melindy. We've been talking about the issue of family trees in a complicated time of family structures. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Melindy Byrne is the president of the American Society of Genealogists and director of Boston University's Genealogical Research Certificate Program. She joined us via Skype from her home in Bedford, New Hampshire. Tomorrow, Neil Conan will be back in the host's chair for a conversation with political junkie Ken Rudin. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Brian Naylor in Washington.